Before we begin today's show, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to a friend of the show, Malika Andrews, who has finally left the bubble in Orlando and is now safely back in her apartment in New York City. She spent 107 days at Disney covering the NBA for ESPN, and she just did an awesome job, and we're so proud of her. She joins Pablo Torre for today's edition of the ESPN Daily Podcast to talk about her experience at the bubble and what it will be like entering back into the real world. That's ESPN Daily, and you can download and subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts or where you're listening to this podcast right now. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. I'm getting this out of the way right at the start because my producer, Troy Farkas, says so. He actually wanted me to do it at the end, but I want to get it out of the way right now because I'll forget later. If you are a fan of the Hoop Collective podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. Okay, got that? Thank you. Joining us from Southwest Florida is front office insider Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Brian. Hello,
Tim. How are you?
Just well, just well. Oh, you spoiled the surprise.
I did spoil it. I'm sorry, Brian.
It's Wednesday afternoon, so you know Timothy Band McMahon is joining us from Dallas.
Howdy, partners.
God, Bobby has so much good stuff out on ESPN.com right now. I don't even know which story to point you toward, but there's a lot of it. Just go to Bobby's Twitter feed because it's all on there. It'll make you smarter. And we're gonna do some forward looking. Obviously, you know, the Lakers with a, you know, congratulations to them. They earned this one. We are gonna look forward today because you know, we've been living in the bubble for so long, but it's time to see what's coming up next. And that's what's going to be a big challenge, Bobby. What's coming up next? I know it's something that you've been obsessing about for months now. And the players' union and owners specifically decided not to have formal discussions. I'm sure there were informal discussions, but not to have formal discussions about collective bargaining agreement talks for next season until after the bubble was over. And that really made me wonder all along, why would they do that? Time is of the essence. This is going to take some time. Why delay? And I wonder if it's because they were afraid that it might not go so well and that it could potentially put the games in the bubble at some sort of jeopardy. Or am I just being conspiracy theorist, Bobby?
No, I think you're right, Brian. I think what happened is if both sides started negotiating when the finals started and word gets out that the league is looking to take back instead of 10% escrow, let's say 30% escrow, you're going to have a lot of unhappy players that are still playing. And if you had survived for 3 months in that bubble, you needed to get to the finish line here and you could wait another week to start the negotiation. But yeah, it's weird. We're in the off season, but technically we're kind of not because we're still got that transaction moratorium going on. And it's all about the negotiations between both sides. And like when the season was postponed in March and the word of the day was, words of the day was force majeure. The word of the day is going to be escrow. I mean, that's what's going to be dictated as far as how this deal gets done is what the player association agrees as far as an escrow, a number that the league can keep in reserve when revenue takes another.
I don't like all these financial terms, but I mean, the real issue is that the NBA and the players split the difference 50-50. Okay. Roughly. I know there's some slide to 49-51, but for the sake of this podcast, if you could just picture a pie, left side goes to the players, right side goes to the owners. There's expectations year over year of what the revenue is going to be, and that's how they set the salary cap, and that's how they make sure it gets to close to 50-50. And some years it's a little off. Some years the owners get 3% too much, and they have to write a check to all the players. Sometimes the players get a little bit too much, and they have to write a check to the owners. And to make sure that that is all a balance, they hold money aside from the players' paychecks during the year to make sure. It's kind of like if you have a mortgage and you pay your taxes out of your mortgage, they take a little bit of money out every month to hold aside to pay your tax bill every 6 months. And sometimes, you know, usually that taxes is enough. And sometimes you have a little bit more that you get back. Sometimes it's a little bit under, you got to pay more, what have you. It's the same kind of idea held in an escrow account. The problem is that all of the contracts, or at least 75% of the contracts that the players have signed, because about 25% of the league or so will be free agents, are based on a number next year that's probably not going to exist because of the pandemic. It's probably just going to be less than. And so in order to make sure that the books balance out for next year and that we don't get to the end of the season and, oh, the players got 65% of the revenue and the owners only got 35% or more, they're going to have to withhold more money out of the players' paychecks. And this is where things, and Bobby, I don't know if the average player, certainly there are players who are aware of this. Do you think the average player is aware of what this negotiation is going to entail with holding this money out?
I don't think so, but they're going to learn quickly when, you know, potentially 30% of their salary is withheld. And then, you know, you talked about agent fees and state taxes and federal taxes.
Yeah,
it's going to be the 38 or the $40 million that LeBron James, now maybe that's a poor example. Let's say the $40 million that LeBron James is owed next year is not $40 million.
Okay, so Bobby and I had an FAQ that ran on .com today that went over this, but let's just go. I took player X who lives in California, who makes $10 million, okay? Beautiful salary. I'm sure that player lives a wonderful life. Okay, between state taxes in California, which are 13% if you make $1 million a year or more, and your federal income taxes, you're going to be paying about 48 to 50% of your money in tax. So that $10 million is down to $5 million. I know I'm not crying either, but I'm just going over this. You pay your agent up to 4%. Not everybody's paying 4%, but a lot of players are. So now you're down to, you're down to about having 46% of your salary that you're actually going to bring home. What Bobby is saying is to get a deal on next season, it may require taking 30% of your salary and holding it aside with the reality that you may not get that 30%. Maybe you end up, with an 18% pay cut and you get 12% back. But at the start, your paycheck is going to take that 30% out. Now your $10 million salary is now down to less than 20%. Now it's down to 1.8 million or whatever the math is. And again, I'm not saying here that anybody should have tears streaming down their face about this. But when this actually gets in front of the players' eyes and they see what this potential ask is, McMahon, this is what the worry is. Is that this is going to cause a problem.
Yeah, and then what the NBA obviously is trying to do is figure out how they can maximize the revenue, which means when might it be safe to have fans or even in some cases allowed to have fans in games, whether it's whatever percentage of crowd like we're seeing in some NFL and college football games, or I cannot imagine full crowds anytime soon until there's a vaccine at least. But and then at a certain point you also get to, okay, you're trying to have fans at games, when can you do that? And then how are you going to have an 82 game schedule and make the calendar work while also prioritizing player health? So this is about as complicated discussions and negotiations as you could possibly imagine, with a lot of things that they can negotiate and then a lot of things that are completely out of both the union and the league's control.
So let me ask you this, Bobby. Do you think this gets wrapped up in time for the draft on November 18th?
Yeah, I do. I do. I really don't see how much wiggle room the players have here, unless they really want to put a hard stance here. I think we get a salary cap and luxury tax.
Well, here's the wiggle room the players can say. Okay, the players can say, hey, instead of us holding 30% of our salaries out, how about we hold 20% out? And then we give you an IOU for next season, as in 2021, 2022.
It would be almost like what happened this current year, right? Like we started with a 10% escrow. And then when the pandemic happened in March, then we went 25% of remaining salary. So that's how they would look at it, as far as, let's see where revenue is. And if we have to start deducting in, you know, let's say the season starts in January and we don't get fans back, or the full amount, then we start taking more out of players' paychecks in March and April.
So yeah, here's the thing. So when we say escrow, like literally the teams write a check to the players and it goes into a separate account that I guess earns interest over the course of the season. But what I think the teams want to do, Bobby, and this is what they did this spring, is not even write the check. They want to hold the money themselves and never and not put it in escrow, at least a portion of it, so that they can fund their operations.
Teams have the discretion of what they wanted to do with that 25% that was withheld. You could do whatever you want. You want to pave the parking lot at your building, you could do that. You could order, you know, that was at the discretion. Although that if the books did not even out, or if the books did even out, then you'd have to give that money back to the players. But the likelihood is that money is not going back to these guys.
So, you know, probably it's all going to get worked out. I don't anticipate there being a lockout, but I also anticipate there being some level of stages of grief, stages of loss before you get to acceptance on this thing. Do you think the owners could ask for any other concessions, Bobby, other than working out the finances? Because they have the right, if I'm not mistaken, to blow up the CBA and restart. But were there any other issues do you think they would try to talk about which potentially could hold matters up on next season?
Yeah, I mean, they had the right as of Thursday. That's the opt-out date, which will probably get pushed back. I don't see it. I think
why would the players allow that to be pushed back?
I think to give them enough time to get a deal. I think, you know, if I'm the players, I don't want this thing being blown up here. I think that probably gets pushed back.
Because that's a hammer that the league has. The league does have this hammer, right? That they can, because there was so much revenue lost when the pandemic, the league could drop this hammer and blow up the CBA and say, we have no deal. We have to start over. And they have rolled that. There was a deadline for it originally in May, right? And they agreed to push it back to September. And then when they realized what the bubble was going to be, they pushed it back until after the bubble. But that hammer is still up there on the shelf. So if you're the players, why don't you say, put away that hammer? The deadline's going to pass. Let's work together. Why not say, get rid of that hammer? I don't understand why they would agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. But I think where we're heading, I think they're looking at it like we have basically not much leverage here. Let's try to work this through. I think it's kind of, you know, I know that even if it gets extended 2 weeks and that you still have that looming over, it's hard for me to believe that the owners would actually enforce that.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Let's get in something that's a little bit more practical for fans out there. What does this mean for trades, Bobby? There hasn't been a trade in the NBA since February. This is probably the longest there hasn't been a trade, I guess probably since the lockout in 2011. I would assume that trades will eventually get allowed and that there's a bubble, another bubble, sort of a bubble of teams looking to make activity and that there should be moves in and around the draft.
Yeah. I mean, we're still in that transaction moratorium and we're a month away from the draft. And, you know, in the FAQ, one of the questions is, will the trade moratorium be lifted before the draft? And the unanimous answer when you talk to teams is that yes, it will. And a lot of that is because the trade front, player options, non-guaranteed are all kind of intertwined in this kind of moratorium here. And as you guys know, I mean, this is not a market to be a free agent here. Like the transaction game, as far as, you know, teams going out and spending is not going to be there. And that's where the trade market will actually become the free agent market here, as far as how much movement I think is going to wind up happening.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I just think here's a way to look at it. Last year, the teams spent $1.1 billion in 2019-20 in free agent salary from July to September. We're projecting about $300 million to be spent. So you're looking at a quarter of what was being spent here. So now you know, that gets clogged up. The teams that do have cap space, Atlanta, Charlotte. I mean, you think Charlotte's going to go out and spend $25 million or
who's the Terry Rozier of this free agency crowd?
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta's going to use all that money here. And so when that gets tied up with the finances, then the next best thing is the trade front. And you're going to be seeing teams, if they want to shake up their roster, which always happens, there's teams that are not content as far as where they are. That's the next line that they're going to look at.
Yeah. So instead of Charlotte and Atlanta signing players, they will trade for players, possibly. And teams that have want to reduce some payroll may look to offload some salary.
And the mid-level exceptions are going to be more valuable than maybe ever.
Oh, they're going to be like the golden ticket, the mid-level.
And I think this sort of favors the glamour markets like the LA teams, because if you are a free agent, like let's say, I think Jeremy Grant's a good example of this. Now, Jeremy Grant may get more money than the mid-level from Denver, right? I mean, I don't know what their plans are for him, but if Jeremy Grant becomes a free agent and he only has mid-level offers, which is what, Bobby, 9.3 million.
Yep.
If he basically has a series of $9.3 million offers out there, and you're trying to break the tie, you know, I think it favors you trying to play in a market where you have a chance to win. I think that, so that is something that, you know, would swing in the favor of the LA teams and, you know, potentially, you know, Dallas or who else would be on that list, McMahon, teams that, you know, would be able to use that free agent or for that mid-level exception to go out and get a player in a market like this, where they may not otherwise have been in the ability to compete for free agents.
Yeah. The Heat, I just think, I mean, Bobby, how many higher than mid-level deals do you anticipate being signed?
Higher than mid-level. Ooh, yeah. Not many.
I think
you'll see guys, if it's going to be, it's going to be resigning with their own team. So Joe Harris in Brooklyn, right? Davis Bertans, right, in Washington. Maybe Dragic and Crowder for a year in Miami. You'll see guys like, maybe Marcus Morris and Montrezl Harrell back in with the Clippers. But yeah, the mid-level is of high value here. I mean,
what happens to a guy like Danilo Gallinari, for example? You know, Oklahoma City is sort of moving on. Do they look to sign and trade him?
I was going to say it would have to be sign and trade for him to land in a situation that would be attractive to him, I would think.
Unless he wants to go to Atlanta, Charlotte, Detroit, or
or does a guy like Danilo Gallinari go to the Lakers on a 1-year deal?
Right. That's how I was going to say. I could see a lot. And at some point, like last year, there was just a ton of 1-year deals because the market wasn't what guys wanted. At some point, you know, if all people are doing, you know, or if the vast majority of guys are signing 1-year deals, it's like the whole league's going to be a free agent at some point.
And that's where, guys, when these cap numbers eventually come out, and from what I understand is that 2021-22 are going to be part of it, that if the cap, you know, does go up or from where the 109 is, let's say it goes to 115 in 2021, then you are probably going to see a lot of 1-year deals, because then it just opens up that more teams next summer or next offseason will have room, and teams and players are going to want to take the wait and see approach.
Yeah, it's a very difficult market to read, and I do think that there's going to be some players who are going to be trapped, who are going to be stuck, and they're going to have to make a decision on money versus where could I really maximize this year. If I'm getting 4 or 5 million less than my value, because that's the layout, that's the way the situation is with this current time that we're in, well, what other incentives can I get that will make it better for me? Either will it set me up for 2021 because my niche on this team is very good? Or do I want to go play someplace warm? Or do I want to go play someplace where the taxes are favorable or where I have friends?
Or in Europe. You know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, last year, Mirotić made that decision when he had options in the NBA.
I think for a role player, maybe. But
well, you know what, too, you might see is that players signing one-year deals with a wink-wink that they'll be dealt when it gets closer to the trade deadline. That, like example, Brian, is like, what happens with Tristan Thompson, right? I mean,
Tristan attended the Cavs bubble workout, mini bubble workout, even though he's a free agent.
And that's rare.
Andre Drummond didn't even go, and he's the highest paid player on the team. So Tristan obviously thinks he's going to be back in Cleveland. There's a good chance of him being back in Cleveland. If you're the Cavs, you maybe sign him to a deal and you maybe try to trade him then midway through the year, when things may loosen up a little bit, which is what happened like with Marcus Morris this year. New York signed him to a one-year deal and they ended up trading him. So they got a first round pick and an asset or two out of it. So I could see things like that happening. Which again, I think favors the teams that are already established. You know, I think the Lakers will probably have their pick. The Lakers and Clippers will probably have their pick of what they want to do with their exceptions. And they have to be smart about it because it's going to be an advantage. And if you're the Lakers, it may be a player that you may want to trade at some point. So, it's going to be sort of in between moves that happen this offseason, I think. Bobby, do you feel that there will be a lot of trades within the draft moving picks around?
Yeah, just because of teams that have multiples. You know, Boston's not going to keep all three picks, unlikely. They've got 14, 26, and 30. Their roster is already packed as is. Minnesota at 117 and 33, right? Like, so you could see 17 and 33. Can they move those to move up? Philly's got four second rounders. So I do. I think the night of the draft is going to be active. And I think it's going to be active too, just because there's no consensus of what the top, three or four players, in order at least, maybe it's, Ball, Wiseman, Edwards, and some, that type of order. But I think there's so much fluidity to this draft that I do think there's going to be a lot of movement.
McMahon, if you were Golden State, would you pick number two or would you move number two?
I would definitely shop number two. Whether I would move it would depend on, obviously, what the market is there. I'd be shopping the heck out of that. And obviously, more than willing to include Wiggins in any kind of deal that you might be able to put together. But to me, there's a lot more value in getting a significant win now piece of that, just because when you look at their core, Steph, Clay, Draymond, it's not like they've got a 5 to 8 year window. I mean, it's about a optimistically 2 to 4 year window. So getting a 19-year-old kid, you could argue, maybe that guy could take the torch. I'd rather get an accomplished vet in there who can help them contend again right away.
Tim, I think, I think I know what they have to do is, they've got that big trade exception at 17.2, and it's going to expire right when free agency starts, about a week. I think it's a week after the moratorium is. You've got to look at taking the second pick in a draft and moving back. I'll give you an example. And then this is just an example here, taking two and flipping it with Phoenix at 10 and going after like a player like Kelly Oubre, doing something like that where you're moving back in the draft, you're still getting a first, and now you're getting a really solid either starter or bench player, because I don't know if you can get a superstar within that trade exception there,
It's a big trade exception, but you're not trading Chris.
Yeah, there's a cutoff. Yeah, there's a cutoff there. So I think that's kind of the mindset if you're Golden State. But man, that just doing the math on that, like you know, you're taking back $15-16 million. You're going to add like $80 million in luxury tax costs.
And it's you don't know if you're going to be able to have fans in that arena that's supposed to be a cash cow for you. So, yeah.
Well, yes, but I will say this, that the Warriors recently did a deal where they took on $300 million in financing, partially because they are dealing with a heavy mortgage. And that, you know, they don't, you know, in addition to having to pay for that building, there's a bunch of real estate around the building. If you've never been to Chase Center, it's surrounded by office buildings. That was the play. That was why they paid them. You know, it was privately funded. And the idea was not only were they going to make a bunch of money on all these concerts and other events that they can have there, but all of these people were going to want to be in this district. I think Uber is one of their partners there. I think Uber's headquarters was supposed to, I think it's still there, but I don't know how people are working out of it. And instead of there being 15 or 20 restaurants and all these offices and people using, you know, apartments around there, those places are all empty right now. But having said all that, they were able to get some financing where they freed up, I believe it was over $300 million in some financing. And so, like, on one hand, yes, they've got big bills, but on the other hand, because their equity is so great that, you know, the Warriors themselves are worth billions more than they were paid for. And that arena is so valuable. I do think that it also gives them, you know, like, for example, the Utah Jazz can't do that. If the Utah Jazz, you know, were operating in the red and they needed to, and they wanted to get an extra player, you know, I don't think they could borrow $300 million. Or, I mean, maybe they could, but not under the same terms. Or they'd have to sell a piece of the team. They didn't do that here. So while I do think that they're not going to just be willy-nilly just to do a deal to spend the money, I think that the Warriors are well capitalized. I think the Warriors are optimistic that they will get people in that building before the end of the season.
I like the Uber idea, though. And I like it for the Suns, too, because, you know, you get say it's LaMelo Ball, if they like him, then, you know, you get a guy who can kind of learn under Rubio for a little bit, and then they finally would have a point guard of the future.
And then I'm going to play fantasy GM, and then I'm going to clear, I have enough cap space, I'm going to go out and put a big offer for Fred VanVleet and put him with Devin Booker in the backcourt. Just fantasy GM, not for the aggregators.
Well, right. But, I mean, Fred VanVleet's going to be an interesting case study because, while we've been talking about how there's going to be a bear market, Bobby, you're describing basically where there's going to be 75% less spending this offseason as to last. That's a bear market if I've ever heard one. But Fred VanVleet could buck that because we think there's going to be interest in Detroit, who needs a point guard, where his former coach Dwayne Casey is, although I think Christian Wood is also going to be a priority for Detroit. There may be interest in Phoenix either way, whether they clear the space off or not. There could be interest elsewhere. And then, of course, Toronto wants to keep him. So Fred VanVleet could end up being one of the quote-unquote winners out of this. My thing, though, is, Bobby, when you look at teams potentially making moves and financial moves, you talked about maybe Charlotte or Atlanta taking on, you know, salaries, there's got to be teams that want to take a step back. And I don't, other than Oklahoma City, which we think is going to restructure itself, what team is in a position to go backwards right now? There aren't a lot of teams that look to me like they're headed for rebuilding. Like the Knicks are rebuilding, but they're already in the midst of it. They're not looking to ship out talent, I don't think. Who are the sellers, Bobby?
Well, that's a good question. And what the sellers is that there's not that many of those bad contracts anymore, right? Like those guys who signed in 2016, they're not here anymore. They're all this part of this free agent class. The Biombos, Mahinmis, you know, Dang and Noah have already been stretched here. And if you're looking at teams who are luxury tax, Brooklyn, Philly, Golden State, Boston, for this upcoming year, like those teams are in the win now mode, right? Like they're not looking to try to trade off key guys just to duck, you know, have some savings here. So the Carmelo Anthony trade to Atlanta for Dennis Schroeder, I don't know if that's there this offseason, just because there's not that many teams that are looking to, there's probably more buyers than sellers.
Okay. So you also mentioned that there was 26 players with player options. Was that the number?
I think we're at around 40. Yeah. But it's a mixed bag. I mean, we've got some player, we got some team options here. I mean, we're going to see a lot of these guys.
Do you anticipate, and so like Anthony Davis has a player option, for example.
Yeah. He's going to opt out.
He's going to be one of the guys who's in all, unless the salary cap crashes and it doesn't make sense for him, but I don't think it's going to happen. So he's going to opt out and become a free agent, and 99.99% re-sign in LA. It'll just be for however many years to where he gets the market right. My guess would be 2 years, by the way, is what he'll sign for. 2+1 is what he'll sign for, is my guess, because I think the cap is going to be held steady for the next 2 years. And also that would return him to free agency in year 10, which would enable him to get the larger contract.
Yeah, 35%.
So, right. So my wager, not my knowledge, my wager would be Anthony Davis re-signs with the Lakers for 2 years plus one, plus one player option, unless he and LeBron have some desire to match their contracts. LeBron has 1 year plus a player option left. And unless, just to make sure everything's A-okay with the Lakers, that he would sign 1+1 so that he and LeBron could be free agents next year in the event that something happens. I mean, if I were Anthony Davis, I'd want the extra guarantee, but I guess it could happen that he could go 1+1. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Are there any other players of those who you think could opt out and become free agents? I mentioned Jeremy Grant. I think he will, right? Is there anybody else?
I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And I think more for the fact, not to really, like, I don't see Atlanta, you know, those teams with Castaways coming in and giving him a big offer. I could see him opting out in the Lakers giving him a pay increase off that $8.5 million number. You know, maybe a 1 year at, you know, $12 million or $13
million. So this is interesting. So first off, Caldwell Pope is represented by Rich Paul. All right. His salary with the Lakers has been pretty fascinating. He made $18 million 2 years ago. Then he made $12 million. Now this year he made $8 million, right? So it's gone down. He has an $8.5 million player option. If he opts out and becomes a free agent, the Lakers have to re-sign him, right?
Almost certainly.
Right? He was vital for them. And they have his full bird rights. They can pay him whatever, right? So if you're Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and I will tell you that Rich Paul and Mark Termini, who does the negotiations, they don't do favors. Okay? That is not how they operate. All right? Why wouldn't they say, Danny Green makes $15 million. My guy's as good as Danny Green. You can't replace him. I will accept a 2-year $15 million contract. Thank you.
And by two, you mean 2-year 15 per, 2-year 30 mil.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Or even 1-year 15. Like, how can you look Caldwell Pope in the eye and say that he's not worth what Danny Green is to that team?
And especially when you have to keep those agents happy.
I'm going to tell you something, though. It's not, Rich Paul doesn't operate that way. And people make a lot of assumptions about Rich Paul. Here's what I'm going to tell you about Rich Paul, number one. And I've known this guy for 15, 16 years, okay? He is about business. He is business first. Now, does he try to take care of LeBron James, his number one client? Did he go make sure Anthony Davis got to the Lakers? Yeah. But I'm telling you, they are businessmen. And sometimes it doesn't work out. It didn't work out with Caldwell Pope when he was, you know, their negotiations with Detroit fell apart. There was an offer, then it was gone. And Caldwell Pope hasn't gotten that money back. There's other guys that they've, you know, thought they could get more and ended up not getting it, ended up, you know, sort of out on the plains in the wind. But they've gotten a lot of big contracts by not relenting. And so, Bobby, I see what you're saying. You're like, listen, give Caldwell Pope a 50% bump. It's a 1-year, $12 million deal. You know, good job. But I can also see Rich saying, yeah, I know we all got rings. I know LeBron and AD are all happy, but we're not talking about them right now. We're talking about Kentavious Caldwell Pope. He's as good as Danny Green. Give me the money.
And we're talking about leverage.
And they always do that. I mean, they held out J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson in Cleveland for months. You know, is kind of the same situation. You know, yeah, the Cavs were winning because of LeBron. Those guys were getting paid because they worked with LeBron, but didn't mean they were just going to do it for the hell of it. So I'll be interested to see what happens there, just like I'll be interested to see what happens with Marcus Morris and Montrezl Harrell, because I don't know what Montrezl Harrell's value was in the market, Bobby. But he's pretty valuable to the Clippers, I think. Like if he were to walk, like if he went to Atlanta, which they have bigs, they wouldn't go.
Yeah.
If he went to
Charlotte,
went to Charlotte on like a 2-year, $32 million deal, it's not like the Clippers have somebody else, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, that they could just go sign to replace him. So his leverage to the Clippers is that you can't replace me.
Yeah, but the Clippers' leverage with him is that there might not be a real big market for him after his bubble performance, if we're being honest.
But as I always say, it only takes one.
True.
That's it.
All right, so who are the other are there any other guys who have player options?
Well, I mean, here's a good – I mean, and Tim, you know, covers these guys. Like, in a normal year, you'd – like, Tim Hardaway Jr. had a good year this year. But he's not going to opt out of, you know, $19 million.
No.
But Austin Rivers, who's got a player option at the minimum, like I think it's like 2.6 or 2.7, probably would, right? Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't hurt him to go out there. The same with Rondo in L.A. He's at the minimum with a player.
I'd be asking for the mini mid level, baby.
But here's the thing with Rondo is interesting is that so he's got early bird rights in with the Lakers. So if he opts out, they can sign him at early bird rights, which means they can go up to the average player salary, so up to, you know, $10 million. But it has to be for 2 years. Like, there's no
way. That's not happening.
So unless
we love you, Rondo.
Yeah, I mean, unless you take – he wants part of that mid-level, which would be too valuable to give up, you know, to sign Rondo here. But, yeah, I mean, I think guys we're going to probably – you know, we're looking at guys opting in, or certainly Mike Conley and DeMar DeRozan, Gordon Hayward. Andre Drummond, some of those bigger named free agents. It'd be interesting what guys like who are making at the $5 million guys like Enes Kanter. You know, can he earn that back, or does he say,
I would say, you know what,
the minimum is not that far off for where my salary is going to be. Let me lose a little bit of money and go for a team I maybe have a bigger role. I think that's probably what, you know, what his thinking would probably have to be.
What about Avery Bradley? He has a $5 million player option.
I think his numbers, that's the number that he would probably get in free agency. I think if he went out there. And as we talked earlier, the mid-levels, either the tax mid-level, which will be around 5.8, and the full mid-level at 9.3, I mean, those are going to be of high, high value. To the point maybe some teams might not even use those. You know, when you have no revenue coming in, And you're Indiana, and you've already got a payroll of $127 million. Like, it's hard to justify spending $6 million of your mid-level when you don't have anything coming back in.
Could Indiana be a seller? And when we talk about teams that just are looking to make a financial move, when you talk about, you just mentioned the size of their payroll, the circumstances. I mean, they're a playoff team, but they're not a contender. Could Indiana be one of those teams that might make a deal with an Atlanta or a Charlotte, or, you know, a cap space kind of trade?
Well, Brian, I think the interesting name, and that's a good point, Tim, is what happens to Oladipo,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like, that's going to be the name. Like, who's going to be the first disgruntled all-star/superstar to be like, I want out, right? Like, is it going to be – we don't have one yet. But I think that's going to be interesting.
Well, Depot recently gave an interview where he said he wants to be in Indiana. You can decide whether or not you believe that, but he brushed that away. But Indiana has Domantas Sabonis' salary coming on the books and is facing $125 or so million dollar payroll.
And the Sabonis Miles Turner fit, paying both those guys. I mean, there's
no, I think you're right, McMahon. I think Indiana is a candidate to do something with their roster.
And it, and
I don't
maybe
know if
it's,
it'll be
maybe
a straight sell, but
yeah, right. Maybe one of those teams, one of those few teams with cap space is a facilitator in the deal instead of the destination. But Indiana, I mean, it seems like a team that's primed for some sort of shakeup, perhaps financially motivated.
I suspect the Cavs will be interesting players as well, because I think if/when Andre Drummond picks up his option, I think they will look to deal potentially with Drummond, willing to take on money long term. So if you're looking to move off of a player with multiple years and you're willing to take Drummond, who still is he still produces, you can argue about whether his production is useful in this day and age, but you know, it's not like he's a double-double guy. So I think Cleveland, who I believe is intending to try to compete for the playoffs next year, whether or not you think that's feasible or not is a different discussion, but you could have a guy like that come onto the market, you know, a big one-year contract. But I do think, you know, we kind of thought that during the season, Oklahoma City would be the team to watch because we thought Chris Paul might get traded. We thought Gallinari might get traded.
Schroeder, possibly. Steven Adams. You know, yeah, they got a lot of guys.
So they ended up not doing anything. And so now I think that it accelerates to this offseason where they've come out and pretty much said that they're on a different page than Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan may not want to do this rebuild. So how many of those guys might be? I mean, I'm sure Chris Paul's available today if you're willing to call and give them something for a guy who's got 85 million left on his contract.
I'm
sure they take your call.
He's a lot easier to trade now than he was at this point last year.
I agree.
And at this point last year, obviously there was a full extra year of a max contract. And there are questions about, dude, is this guy is he about
to
fall off a cliff? Where
remember, you know, he makes $42 million, something like that.
Yeah,
that's a hard trade to construct with flotsam and jetsam. You know, and Oklahoma City's would rather just pay him the money than take all your bad contracts.
Well, in OKC's, obviously they're not giving up picks to get a pick or pick to get
that's
off
their
him.
Goal. Nor should they, frankly.
Well, you know, if they were wanting to give up picks, they probably could have moved him last year. But he proved that not only can he play, but he still, I think he performed at a super. I mean, he was an All NBA player this year.
Yeah,
and you know, the difference between 2 years left of the max and 3 years.
I think there's no way. I think they'd be looking, Bobby. If you called, if you were in your, because you know some people have speculated various places he could go. If you were in your role with the Nets, and you called Sam Presti or somebody else in his office, Rob Hennigan, who just got promoted to, I can't remember what his title is. What would your discussion with him be like over Chris Paul, checking on his availability? I mean, how would that conversation go?
Well, I mean, are you looking to get off his money? What are you looking for? We've got expirings, and maybe if it makes sense, we'd give you a future first. That's probably how it would go.
And I think if Oklahoma City, who thought that they may have to incentivize to get off Chris Paul, I think if they could get a future first round pick for Chris Paul,
yeah,
and they could get off the money in a year, in other words, not because it's the second
cut their bill in half, basically.
Cut their bill in half and get an asset. I mean, granted, they would probably get worse, but I think they're doing that deal 8 times a week.
Yep, I agree.
So they could end up being one of the most interesting teams. I do think you're onto something there. I think Indiana will do something. Of course, they've got to figure out what their coaching situation is. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirectTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Who are some other teams, Bobby, that, because like, you know, Dallas is an upwardly mobile team and Miami is an upwardly mobile team, but they're both trying to protect cap space for 21. So I don't see them being big players unless it's for a guy on a one-year deal. But there could be some other teams that are willing. I'm telling you, I think Cleveland could be in the market.
I think San Antonio is interesting to me because the bubble kind of showed that, hey, it's Derek White, it's Deontay Murray, it's Keldon Johnson. You know, LaMarcus wasn't there. DeRozan played basically the four. They've got a lot of these veterans on expiring contracts. DeRozan, Aldridge, Patty Mills, Rudy Gay. I mean, that's four guys right there in a Western Conference that is going to be as loaded as we've seen in a long time. I think that's a team that's that really intrigues me as far as what they do with those guys.
McMahon, is there any team that you're watching?
I was going to mention San Antonio with those veterans. I will say this. It's hard for me to see them parting with Patty Mills.
Yeah.
Just because of the, you know, he's a, I mean, he didn't spend his whole career in San Antonio, but he's been there a long time and he's a huge part of kind of what they want to be about. But, you know, definitely the DeRozan Aldridge stuff.
He was Patrick Mills when he came there, right? Wasn't he? He came up by Patrick.
I think so. Yeah. But, now, like I said, Indiana and San Antonio are the two that I think it makes sense of. And Oklahoma City. Those are the three that it would make sense to take a step back basketball-wise, perhaps, to make a deal that is getting off a salary.
Team I'm watching in New Orleans. They did, I believe, I don't think they were actively shopping Drew Holiday at the deadline, but I believe that there was some calls were placed, and I think Brooklyn is a very interesting possible partner there. Also, it depends. Like if they hire Ty Lue, which I don't think is going to happen. You know, Ty is in the mix in Houston and LA. And I think the Clippers hire him if I had to bet today, but, if they hire Ty Lue, they go one direction. If they hire Stan Van Gundy, they go a certain direction. If they hire Jamal Mosley, you know, maybe they go a different direction. Maybe they're looking to trade JJ Redick and Drew Holiday. I don't know. I mean, and if Redick and Holiday are on the market, I think, you know, Redick would have 1 year at like 12 and a half or 13, Bobby. And I think I think both of those guys could fetch them really interesting packages.
What's a Brooklyn deal that makes sense for Holiday? Because I do think, I mean, that would give them a third star for sure.
LeVert and Allen.
Yeah.
Bobby, what do you think of that?
Oh, I would, that's probably what you're looking at. And I think that would have, if I was in New Orleans, I'd have a intrigue with that package.
Well, you're talking about LeVert, Ingram, obviously Zion, Allen fits in that. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they have some young bigs there, that they may not want Allen to get in the way of, but I think Allen would be better than any of them. You know, that also presumes that they let Derek Favors walk, you know? So, but it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out and what the rules are. And Bobby is going to be all over that. And McMahon will be all over that. McMahon just having a report on the Rockets coaching search. If you had to guess today, McMahon, who do you think is going to coach the Rockets?
I am at an I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a responsible answer.
Yeah, I told you a week ago that I thought it was going to be Jeff Van Gundy. My confidence has been dented.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll say this. I still think Ty Lue ends up staying in LA. I still think, and like, Ballmer's not going to be outbid if he decides that's the guy that he wants. So that's, you know, that's why I'm not going to say Ty Lue right now. Tillman Fertitta is not going to outbid Steve Ballmer if Ballmer wants to keep Ty Lue in LA. So I don't know. I don't have a real confident prediction at this point.
I have no idea what the Rockets are going to look like or be in 3 months. They could look a lot like they do now.
Yeah.
Or they could be very different. I just don't know.
I still think this year they will look very similar. But you know, that window of 2 to 3 years, it might be one.
Well, I think just about anybody could say that about their team. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. I know we're all over the place, but that's where we are right now. Things can go a lot of different directions, and we're here to keep an eye on it and tell you what we think is going to happen, and even if we don't know sometimes. Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, McMahon. Thank you to Troy. Subscribe, rate, and review, blah, blah, blah. We'll be talking to you soon.